You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
Timing, we have Mr. Albert River here to kōrero on a recent project called Banquo, which is a fresh LP straight out the oven. How are we doing, Albert?
Oh, very well. Yeah, thanks, Zach.
Nice. How's the weather vibe where you are?
Weather is good. Yeah, I'm here in Raumati, south, and it's a good time here.
Nice. Yeah. Where's Raumati South? Where is that?
In Kapiti, like, yeah.
Oh, is that in near...
like, Paraparaumu, Wellington.
Yeah. Oh, true. My Wellington geography... My North Island geography is so bad, because I'm a South Island boy, born and bred.
I see. Yeah,
from Invercargill originally.
Oh, wow, the deep south.
Deep south, as deep as it can get. Wow. Yeah. But anyway, we're here to talk about your new LP album.
You just played Carpenter there. I played the bass and the keys on that song.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's true, because you did, obviously, Vera Allen is your sibling, your sister. And you had quite a lot of involvement with their previous effort, correct?
Yeah. I mean, I've been playing with Vera since she was 15, so always just involved in some degree. But yes, Banquo is the new record that I'm doing. And yeah, it's just been released finally after many years, so I'm pretty stoked about that.
Hell yeah. Oh, sorry, I'm a bit yawning this morning. I will get talking to that ASAP, Rocky. So my first question to you is, what is your biggest woe about banks?
Where do I start?
Where do you start? Good question.
Insurance. When you've got no money, but then they tax you for not having money in the bank account, I suppose.
True.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's you know, generally a commentary. I mean, you know, I've been an artist for many years, and I've never been able to look at the bank and be happy about it, right? You know, which is just something that us artists go through. And I think there's something in that that's quite deep. And so the record deals a lot with what it means to be a sort of poor artist and to believe in something and, you know.
Yeah, I think especially for people who are making music in what some would call like a little bit of a left field, you know, something that's off the beaten path, such as yourself. I wonder, back in the day when the mainstream was a little bit more heterogeneous, there was more variety, you know, what artists could probably make a living off of music that wasn't just whatever the main trend was, but it doesn't seem like that's a possibility these days, eh?
Yeah, I mean, it's no judgment to people who do
not at all.
Yeah, it's just a general fact, isn't it? I've seen some of the most moving art that I've seen. You know, the artists themselves had full time jobs, and, you know, much like the Olympics, when you go there and you see these people also, you know, working as well and doing what they love. Yeah, it's just an interesting sort of space artistically to be in, and there's compromises inherent in there. And but I think sometimes, you know, it can produce interesting work, and it can sometimes be more vital and more on, you know, in that regard, because it's sort of grounded in that context, you know.
For sure. You've been meticulously crafting on this LP for the past 6 years now. How did that extensive time allow for you to get a clear image of what Banquo would be? I mean, I can imagine you would come up with some demos and you'd really refine them over the course of 6 years, and that process would kind of rinse, repeat, recycle. Is that what kind of happened, or is it a bit different?
Yeah, I suppose it did. I mean, it's very much, I was also learning at the same time. I was doing a lot of learning to mix and learning, you know, to basically achieve. I mean, at some point somebody kind of said to me that you actually just got to follow your own ear, like what it is that you want. And that was really liberating to me, to just be able to follow my own ear in regards to the sounds and soundscapes that I wanted. It took a long time. I was also playing a lot of other music for and other things, and putting energy into into thing other projects, you know, film and other things. So, you know, it was more just like I was enjoying it as well. And yeah, a lot of it to me was sort of about the framing, and it really came down to the feelings. And it just turns out that, you know, that mix was the feelings were just right. Mm-hmm. You know, and go some of the some of them are intense feelings, but they're there, you know, the sort of real. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, the album is quite a high concept LP, which kind of trudges over a lot of different themes, as you allude to. It trudges over some loss, love, death, dreaming, and then some. The LP is only 26 minutes long, so how did you kind of try and tackle these huge concepts whilst remaining concise or succinct?
Well, I don't know how much kind of, you know, even though it did take a long time, it wasn't like I was, you know, thinking a lot about it. The songs themselves kind of just gathered together, and they just situated themselves in that way, right? But yeah, the concepts themselves kind of just bled through as I was just in many, you know, find myself in different moments writing. One thing I made sure to do is perform the songs all the way through, and there's no like click tracks. So what you get is a very felt performance, and a lot of the time it was about 3 a.m. where I'd start. and I basically did it. I had to play it all the way through, you know, so like the performances themselves, you know, the core performances, everything is from, you know, click, record, and go all the way through the song. And, you know, there were no like, yeah, the main thing was to get the core things all the way across, and things like that. And I just could have was experimenting and kind of found that stuff out myself, which is just about capturing like real performance and things like that. And then when I was feeling comfortable, because a lot of the time in the studio, you know, you kind of go in and it's a bit bustly.
Yeah,
but it was just really nice to be at home and just be right there with it, you know. Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you were using the studio as an instrument as well, is that correct?
Yeah, I definitely I did a lot of strange things, you know, in the ways I captured things. You know, a lot of keyboards through amps and mics over the other side of the room, and, you know, just weird things, and just sounds, just affecting the sound in such a way that it's a little bit more difficult to reproduce it to the point where I can't really play it live.
Don't have to worry about the performance pressure.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but no, it's really nice, you know. As again, it's just people out there, if you're artists and stuff, you know, it's important to if you're putting your heart and soul into something, you know, it's important to see it through, and to be and to enjoy the process, you know, to pay attention to that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, for sure. There's a really interesting element to some of the tracks here. There's flute on some of the tracks, which was made from an ancient piece of kodi. How old is the piece of kodi, and how did you make the flute?
No, there's a flute maker up the coast here called Todd Chaplin. He makes those flutes, and I sort of it was really lovely. I worked with him. He was very kind of involved and wanted to know what I wanted and things like that. So it's like pitched in an A, which is not that common for, it's quite a low flute. Mm-hmm. I think the ancient kodi, they say, is 30,000 years old. That's what he told me.
Whoa.
He's like, it's super old. And it was one of the last bits of it. So it was 2 years it sort of took to sort of book it and things like that. But I wanted that particular wood and things like that. And, you know, I love like real instruments. I have like a harmonium as well in there, and a few other things, which I got from India when I was there. And, yeah, there's just lots of sort of, things like that. Yeah.
It's a good story to tell as well. It's really awesome. There's a sea of influences on Banquo, from Macbeth to Joni Mitchell, and many, many more. Was Bon Iver an influence on the track Send My Love?
Send My Love, yeah. Justin Vernon. So, I really think, you know, Bon Iver is such a great vocalist and group generally. I typically sort of, I think generally the influence is artists that explore that more vulnerable side of things. And I think I kind of liked how that group, you know, had like folk 2.0 stuff, you know what I mean? Just evolving out of some of the earlier stuff, keeping the authenticity, but sort of modernizing slightly. And I felt that was an interesting style.
Bit of folktronica. It's a good time.
Bit of folktronica. But generally, you know, I just do it but I do love all of those artists. I mean, I particularly love Justin Vernon. I actually met him once. So really nice. Cool
dude.
Real cool, real cool dude. Real, I mean, cool, you know, it wasn't like a bro down. It was just
just a photo with
just a photo and a hello. Yeah,
true. I think you get a lot from even that interaction though, because some people are a bit wanky about it, and others are pretty chill.
No, it was actually really funny. There's a bunch of us that stuck around the town hall after he played and started singing songs like outside the dressing room where they were, and then they all came out and they were like, you guys are crazy.
Oh man, that's awesome. that's so sick. Yeah. Kind of going on a bit of a tangent here, but you come from a family of musicians. You've got sisters Vera Allen and another sister Tammy, who's in the band's Dial.
Tali. Yeah,
oh, Tali, sorry. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I think when I was writing it down in my notes that Al and the EMS are quite next to each other, I think.
Tali.
Anyway, Tali, sorry. Who's in bands Dial, Human Resources, and Another Freaking Problem. Your mother and your uncle were also in a band in the 70s called The Climb.
Yes.
What kind of music did you like grow up with in the house as a kid? Because I imagine having a parent as a muso would be pretty influential on your music taste.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, you know, my mother, she's mostly an occupational therapist and did music as a passion. We listened a lot to, we had, you know, LPs around, obviously. I mean, and so the two that I remember the most was we had Tracy Chapman's solo album, her first one, and Joni Mitchell's Chalk Mark and a Rainstorm. Those were the two that I remember.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. When do you think you realized, I mean, having music like in your blood like that, when do you think you realized that music was something that you really, really wanted to pursue and that it was something that was definitely inside you?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, what it was I was really into soccer when I was in my sort of 13, you know.
Nice.
So I had posters over the wall. And then I think I just, my sister started lending me music. And, you know, I think I may have sort of, been discovering other feelings and stuff. But I got injured anyway, and then I picked up the guitar while I was, you know, missing out on all my soccer. And, just fell in love, really.
Before that point in time, had you ever had an inkling of picking up the guitar before your injury, or was it just
we all played music. I mean, we had guitar lessons, right? Piano lessons, quite strict piano lessons. Susan Beresford, she's in the Hutt Valley, a great piano teacher. She's got a great legacy of students. She taught Vera and myself. Vera was much more successful, but you know, of course, like the thing that was taught to us really was sort of the discipline of music. And then what ended up happening was every Christmas, and we have a big family, and we used to do, you know, sing songs. And it's always a really warm time, you know, when everyone's singing. Mm-hmm. I just felt like...
brings things together, brings people together.
Yeah, I just really resonated with that, yeah. Just, nice. Yeah.
Music is one of those things, like, of all the art forms and mediums, I think music has a very unique way in how it connects people.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think that brings us nearly to the end of the corridor. But do you have any shows that you'd like to announce, or are you not playing at all with the new album?
No, I've got a show coming up at Vogel Morn on the 21st of September. Mm-hmm. With Martin Segarden and Raiden Freeman. So that's at Vogel Morn Hall around 8 p.m.
That's up in Pōnekei, I assume.
Yeah, so not everybody can come to that. tour wise, I do hope to get down again. I toured with Aura, so I've been down south a few times. I remember I had a whopping 9 people come to my Dunedin show, which was sweet.
Crap.
So I hope to get a few more bums and seats next time I come down. But yeah. I'm sort of taking it pretty chill. So
fair enough. Thank you very much for joining me this morning, Albert. It was great chatting with you.
Yeah, it was awesome. Thanks very much.
Thank you, mate. Take care. All right, folks. That was Mr. Albert River chatting about his new LP, Banquo, which you can find on Spotify. There's a vinyl available from the Flying Nun website. Very, very awesome stuff. We're going to play his track, Rungs, for you right now, and then we're going to do In the Loop with Jemima Lorimer. Stay tuned!
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.